8 a.m. having arrived. I'm going to call the Committee on Taxes to order. We do not have a quorum yet, but before we go to our first bill, Representative Carlson was doing some research over the weekend. And in your packets, you remember last week we had a little bit of discussion as to who was the tax chair back in 1989 when kind of the remote seller law was already put into place. So when the Wayfair decision occurred this year, we were already prepared as a state to do that. And we found out actually that was D. Long, who was the tax chair at that time, and then Paul Ogren actually later on in the year. So anyway, Mr. Carlson, Representative Carlson, any comments you want to add to this? So it's great information. Thank you.
I'm sure it'll be of great use to the committee, but Mr. Chairman, when you talked about my research, it involved hitting the elevator button and going up to the legislative library and making the request of them to provide the information. So the credit goes to the legislative library. But the magic year I went back to was 1973. And that set the stage for when I was first elected, so that's why I went back to that particular year. So these would be chairs that I served with on one committee or the other. So at any rate, that was kind of an interesting list. You caught me the other day when you said if I remembered who was the chair at that point in time, and you can see with this long list why I came up a little short in remembering, but thank you.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate the library staff for their wonderful work also. So there you go. I've never seen a list like this. That goes back to that time during the Representative Carlson era. So very good. Thank you much. All right. So we don't have a quorum, so we're not going to move your bill yet, Chair Davids. But following the tradition of this committee, at least under the last few chairs, we start out with the first bill being the bill of the other party opposite the chair. So thank you for that. And so what we'll do, Representative Davids, is if you want to talk to your bill, and then when we get a quorum, we'll put things in order and move from there. But Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 351 is a sales tax exemption bill for firefighting and ambulance equipment. I was brought to me again by at our annual meeting with the Tri-County Firefighters in Fillmore and Houston, Winona counties. They have a legislative agenda that they look at, and this is one area that I took interest in to hopefully pass this bill and remove the sales tax being charged in certain cases on firefighting and ambulance equipment. A little more history here. Back when I first came in 1991, we had about, and don't quote me on the numbers exactly, but like a $790 million shortfall. Governor Ernie Carlson was going to solve that by cutting local government aid and county program aid. And the compromise was that basically it was kind of, people don't realize this that haven't been around here for a while, that basically the cities and the counties asked for their purchases to have a sales tax on them. And then keep the local government aid, and that's a very short synopsis, but that's basically what happened. So ever since then, we've gone into some better economic times. I mean, it's been up and down, but as we've gone into some better times, I've always had a problem with government taxing government. So you have to raise taxes to pay a tax to pay the government that got taxed. Never quite understood that, but I understand how it happened and why it happened. And over the years, members of this House have been whittling away at what a sales tax is charged on. For example, we exempted ambulances some time ago, and then we've gone down the list. There are still a few things that I consider a cleanup, Mr. Chairman, and members, to just get rid of the sales tax on local ambulance and firefighter purchases. Now the trucks and the ambulances are exempt, but if you go to buy some extra equipment, which can be very expensive, there's a sales tax on that. And, Mr. Chairman, we do have a quorum. We do have an amendment that you should have in your packets, the 1A1 amendment. And I know we can't move that at this point, but maybe if Ms. Dalton could kind of explain what that amendment does, so when we do have a quorum, we could move that.
Okay. Chair Davids, we do have a quorum now. So if you wanted to hold on, we're going to do a few things. And so the first thing we have here are the minutes of Thursday, January 24th. Would anyone care to move approval of those minutes? Representative Carlson moves approval of the January 24th, 2019 minutes. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, I will call for the vote on those minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Motion does carry. The minutes are approved. So at this time, Chair Davids would move that House File 351 be put out for and to be considered for layover for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. And with that, you have an amendment. Do you want to now move the amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll move the H0351A1 amendment, please.
Chair Davids moves the H351A1 amendment, and this is an author's amendment. And just for some of the new members here of this committee, is that on author's amendments, this is just to put the bill into the form and order that the author wants, and there's typically no debate, and it's put on, and then the author can discuss the bill. So with that moved, any discussion on the author's amendment? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. A motion carried. The amendment is adopted. So, Chair Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the bill is amended. I have several testifiers who would like to talk about the bill. I have with me first Mr. Buck McAlpin from the Ambulance Association. If we could have his testimony, please, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Welcome, and please state your name for the committee record.
Mr. Chair, members, Buck McAlpin representing the Minnesota Ambulance Association. We'd like to thank Representative Davids for bringing this forward again. This legislature, over its history, has continued to do things along this line to support the ambulance industry. Still about 60-plus percent of ambulance services are all in your rural communities. And like our friends in the fire service and first responder service, they're all volunteer. And most of them are tax-supported at the local level. When we look what supports EMS with user fees, we get out into rural Minnesota, and even in the metro now, about 80% of the payer mix is Medicare and Medicaid, which an average, the last GAO report on Medicare, it's about $650 to do an ambulance run and run a fee schedule from the government at about $450. So every little thing that we do, we had two more small rural ambulance services combine and close down last year. And anything that we can do to help keep revenue back at the EMS system is really important for the viability of rural EMS. The one thing, fire and EMS, that I think the communities depend on, we want to do what they can do, or we can do to keep them afloat. And I think Representative David's correct. Most of these folks are all tax-supported anyway, so we're kind of taxing them to tax the community to offer their services. So we appreciate your support as this moves forward.
Thank you very much. Any questions for? Oh, I'm sorry. Any Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. McAlpine, you said you think Representative Davids is correct. Do you think he's correct, or you know he's correct? Just curious.
Sir, McAlpine.
Mr. Chair, I know he's correct, Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We never know that.
Representative Davids, do you have other testifiers?
Yes, I do. Other folks testify, come forward, please.
Good morning. Welcome, and please state your name for the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Chris Parsons. I'm president of the Minnesota Professional Firefighters Association of about 47 IFF locals located in over 40 communities around the state. We represent career firefighters, dispatchers, and paramedics. I'm here to speak in favor of this bill, and I would like to thank Representative Davids for bringing it forward again. This bill is about common sense tax fairness, and it's also about investment in the fire service and the service that we provide. Minnesota, according to the Center for Fiscal Excellence, ranks 44th in state spending on the fire service. We spend on the fire service like Mississippi spends on education. We've kind of been the redheaded stepchild of public safety over the years. And this bill will go a little bit of the ways in helping to correct that. this issue first came to my attention during the purchasing process for hazardous materials response equipment. This equipment is funded out of appropriations from the fire safety account, and it didn't make any sense that purchases on by state agencies on behalf of cities would be taxed. This is about stretching our public safety dollar, and if we have limited funds that are being appropriated for safety equipment, it just doesn't make any sense that we would hamper our efforts by adding on another tax that is needless. So I stand in support of this bill, and I also brought along a fire chief from Moorhead that can answer some specific questions that you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Parson. Welcome. Identify yourself for the committee.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. My name is Rich Dyson. I'm the fire chief from Moorhead, Minnesota. And I just wanted to speak. I'm kind of here to say, yeah, me too. But I just wanted to speak on behalf of the fire service in general, is that we have, and our hazmat teams, our state-funded hazmat teams, and they get funded through the fire safety account. And when we go to purchase things as a municipality currently, we don't have to pay sales tax on items. But when the state purchases equipment for the 11 hazmat teams, which when they purchase things, they get economies of scale, and then we get continuity as well because we're buying the same type of equipment. But they have to pay sales tax, and over the last 3 years, they've paid about $200,000 in sales tax. And that's $200,000 from the fire safety account that we could have spent on other equipment or things to keep our public safe. And again, it comes down to we're paying tax to pay a tax-supported service, and that just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to us. So this bill would be, we speak in favor of this bill, Mr. Chair, from the 11 hazmat teams that are throughout the state, sprinkled throughout the state, and I'd be happy to take any questions, Mr. Chair.
Any questions for Chief Dyson? And Representative Link?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Chief Dyson, for coming down here. I certainly do appreciate you making the trip, and I think we've got a meeting set up a little later today, so it'll be good to talk more issues. I did have a question, not so much for the bill author, the testifier, but probably more for research staff. What's the difference exactly between the C3 and the C4 organizations?
Ms. Dalton?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, a C4 may have some social aspects to it as well as government aspects. So some of the volunteer fire departments, if they do provide some social aspects to their firefighters, they would be a C4 instead of a C3.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess just a quick follow-up. Was this just an oversight in previous law, or is there any real reason? I don't know. Maybe the bill author maybe want to weigh in on this, why we didn't exempt both types of organizations before.
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lean, actually I'm not even sure there are any 501c4 fire departments in this state. But when we were doing research for this bill, it came to our attention that the IRS allows these volunteer fire departments to be classified as one or the other. And the reason they are not treated the same as government is because the way the Department of Revenue has interpreted the charitable exclusion, which is what the 501c3 volunteer fire departments have been getting a lot of their exemptions under, is that it has to be used directly in the fighting of the fire. So things like fire departments need special washing machines to actually handle the gear. That was not used directly in fighting the fire, so they would have to pay the sales tax on it. But a local government, because of their broader exemption, their fire department didn't have to.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I think this would probably be a question perhaps of the author, so I'll wait.
Okay. Okay. So, very good. Representative Schultz?
I just have a question about the ambulance supply section. Are there, are the ambulances service providers, are they typically nonprofit or for-profit or both? And do we know the ratio, the percentage of each?
Thank you, Chairman and Representative Schultz. I believe we have both. Maybe I can give Mr. McAlpin back up here. And I'd like to thank the chief for coming down in this cold, cold weather, leaving his friends. I believe Moorhead is home of the Spuds, the Cobbers, and the Dragons.
That is okay. Very good. And other members can take note here. Here the author of the bill brought down a local fire chief of the chair and another member. So that's... Might not, but and I
never underestimate my sneakiness.
I understand that, and school has been canceled for back home Tuesday and Wednesday for almost all the area schools. I think it's tonight. It's like -35. The next night, another -35, and so we're getting into the high 20s down here, but it's going to be in the 30s below back home. So Chief Dyson, thank you for venturing this way. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, that's the easy one to answer. There's about four privates left out of 305 licenses. The Ducharme family in Grand Rapids owns Meds One Ambulance. The LaCassure family in Bemidji owns the Bemidji Ambulance since the 60s. And the Ringdahl family since the 60s owns the Fergus Fall Ambulance. And there's one other small private, I believe, in Crookston. The rest are tribal, hospital-based, or not-for-profit. Fire-based is the other one, too.
Thank you.
Any I was going to say that.
Yes. Any other questions before we go back? Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, I think we're back to the author. So, Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I was just noticing the effective date is June 30th. And are we, with that effective date, encouraging the delay of purchases for needed equipment? I'm not proposing a solution, but that's 5 months out. And I assume that various departments across the state have a need currently, and are we encouraging them to just wait and go after June 30th?
Ms. Dalton.
Go to Ms. Dalton.
I think Ms. Dalton.
Chair Carlson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson, that's actually just a standard effective date for sales taxes, mainly because we want people to have time to be aware of a change in the law. So virtually all of our sales tax effective dates would be starting July 1.
No, I'm aware of that.
Mr. Representative Carlson.
In this particular instance, some of that equipment might be pretty important, and yet there's an incentive to perhaps wait. I know why we use June 30th historically, but just pointing that out that there might be an incentive there to delay needed purchases.
Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Chair Carlson, you bring up a very good point. We certainly don't want services not purchasing something because of a sales tax at this point, but I will work with the department, Ms. Dalton, to see if I think it should be upon enactment, but which would, you know, if the omnibus tax bill would be the end of May, you'd be basically waiting June. But I'm certainly open to upon date of enactment. Your point's well taken.
Representative Carlson.
A big window. You know,
right.
We all know when the tax bill ultimately will probably be resolved late in the session. But thank you.
Thank you. Representative Swazinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just echo the Chair's comments about, you know, whether it be delaying purchases or anything, we would, as a minority, we would gladly support moving a tax bill in the next couple of weeks.
Representative Swazinski, I appreciate those comments. Representative Davids, Representative Vector Finn.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and just wanted to thank you for bringing this bill forward. I have a very similar bill that we'll be hearing later, House File 447, addressing basically the same issue. And so didn't want to steal your thunder as the first bill. So good job bringing in the firefighters. Always always good to see them. And I think this is a good bill. And just wanted to put in my two cents that the work that our firefighters do is incredibly important, and I think we do often underfund and undersupport the work that they do in our communities. And just want to also encourage members, if you've never done a Fire Ops 101 training with your local fire departments, if that opportunity presents itself, it's well worth your time to get a taste of the work that they do every day. So I just want to encourage, if you haven't done it yet, go for it. So thanks.
Representative Becker Finn, thank you for your efforts on this topic also. Thank you.
And Mr. Chairman,
David.
Unless there's any other questions, to kind of wrap up, when I went to my Tri-County Firefighters meeting, the annual one they have the first Saturday in January, they brought this up. This was on their agenda. And I said, no, we took care of that some years ago. We don't tax firefighter equipment. But apparently, as we have moved forward, we did miss a few things.
Yes.
And this picks up some of the things that I think should also be exempt. So I'd appreciate the support of the bill as amended that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
All right. Representative Davids renews his motion to lay over House File 351 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill. Thank you much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members.
Next on the agenda is House File 157, and Representative Brand is under the weather. So Representative Gomez, who is a co-author on the bill, has stepped up to the plate to proceed. And so, Representative Gomez, would you like to move House File 157 for possible inclusion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move the House File and ask for your support for its conclusion or inclusion as a part of the omnibus tax bill.
All right. Thank you so much for that. Representative Gomez, please proceed.
Sure. Thanks, Mr. Chair. So some of you may remember this bill from last year. Representative Aaron May Quaid was the chief with co-author support from Representative Hamilton and Chair Davids. It would create a sales and use tax exemption for sales of prepared food to nonprofit organizations that sponsor or manage meals through the federal child and adult care food program to unaffiliated sites and centers. So an unaffiliated center is one in which the sponsor and the site are operated by different legal entities. Only prepared food purchased from a caterer or other businesses under contract with the nonprofit and used directly for these programs would qualify for the exemption. A lot of times there are these like small and mid-sized social service organizations that don't have commercial kitchens themselves, so they like buy catered food from another organization to feed youth and elders in our communities. Child hunger is a big issue in our state. One in five Minnesota children go hungry every day. Another one in three are at risk of going without adequate nutrition. 40% of school-age kids across Minnesota receive free and reduced meals during the year, which makes them vulnerable during the summer break. So this is kind of like a supplement to that nutrition that they get during the school year in their schools. I think that, we can make the tax code a little more fair and help stretch these federal nutrition programs by exempting the prepared food from taxes. I have the Vice President of Youth Prize with me today, Mr. Marcus Pope, and he's going to tell you guys a little bit more about their work and the specifics on the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Pope. Would you introduce yourself for the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am Marcus Pope, Vice President of Youth Prize, founded in 2010 by the McKnight Foundation. Youth Prize serves as a resource for youth-serving organizations and systems that impact youth throughout Minnesota. We are pleased to be here today in support of HF 157. I want to thank Representatives Brand and Gomez for your leadership on this bill. HF 157 is about helping more low-income children and seniors receive healthy food through a tax policy that is more fair and balanced. More specifically, the bill provides a tax exemption for organizations purchasing prepared food as a part of the Child and Adult Food Care Program and the Summer Food Services Program. Working closely with the Minnesota Department of Education, who administers the federal programs, Youth Prize increases access to healthy meals and snacks by handling compliance issues, site training, food vending, and upfront payment of food on behalf of sites. We also work closely with local vendors that prepare and deliver meals and snacks, ensuring compliance with USDA regulations. We raise additional funds beyond the reimbursement to adequately cover the cost of administering the program. As a sponsor of unaffiliated programs, Youth Prize supports organizations where there's no legal affiliation. Sites we serve include recreation centers, churches, community-based organizations, libraries, and charter schools. The programs we serve are unable to prepare their food on site. Our model requires us to vend food to multiple sites across a large boundary using outside vendors. The food is taxed because it is prepared food, even though it is purchased by a nonprofit executing mission-related programmatic activities. We think this is unfair for two reasons. One, smaller sites usually don't have the facilities and capacity to prepare food and adhere to all the regulations. Essentially, the current system is such where if you have a commercial kitchen and certified nutrition staff, then you don't have to pay taxes. Number two, through research, we learned that the intent of the law was to prevent nonprofits from using exempt status to hold large catered fundraising events and board retreats, something we clearly are not doing as a sponsor of these federal nutrition programs. I know there's no debate that finding ways to ensure hunger children are fed is a good thing to do. It's also a good investment. A 2010 study by the University of Minnesota found that hunger costs the state of Minnesota approximately $1.6 billion annually in healthcare-related costs and other costs. HF 157 is critically important in allowing more meals to be served to hungry children. Thank you for your time, and I appreciate your consideration of this bill.
Thank you very much. And before we move to questions, the chair has already made a big mistake on the first bill of the year. I did not ask if there was anyone from the audience who wanted to comment for or against House File 351. So at the conclusion of this bill, if there is, I'll come back to that. So I forgot to do that on the first bill of the year. So are there any questions for the author or the testifier? Is there anyone else in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 157? Seeing none, Representative Gomez, any final comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just thank you for your time and ask my colleagues for your support on this bill.
All right. Representative Gomez renews her motion to lay over House File 157 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, I'm moving back to House File 351. Is there anyone in the audience who would care to speak for or have concerns with House File 351? All right. Seeing none, thank you very much. We're going to move to House File 43, Representative Hertaus. And do we have someone who would care to move House File 43? Chair Davids moves House File 43 for possible inclusion into the tax bill.
Mr. Chair, well, he's preparing to take the table there. I was assuming when you were talking about a major mistake for the first bill, I thought you were talking about Representative Gomez failing to bring treats.
Yeah.
I thought that's what you were talking about. And now she may get a pass on this, Mr. Chair, because she filled in. But still, it was another freshman, I think, we're supposed to bring it.
Yes. Representative Lesh, thank you for bringing that up. But I do think since this was not her original bill, we will give some leniency on this.
She gets off with a technicality?
I think there is maybe a technicality. Okay. The ref just didn't throw the flag.
Understood.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, I would suggest that the 24-hour rule be imposed here.
Representative Loeffler.
Well,
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'm just going to say I thought she did a great job as a pinch hitter, and that I'm glad if he is under the weather that Mr. Brand, Representative Brand, did not provide treats to us this morning.
And, yes, thank you, Representative Gomez, for filling in. Very nice. All right. So, Representative Hertaz, welcome to the committee this morning.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I miss not being on the Tax Committee this biennium, but nonetheless, I hope to see you frequently. And for those members who weren't at the Farm Bureau meeting last night, Chair Marquardt announced that much of the legislation that we passed last year that didn't become law, that it was going to be relief forthcoming. And I am thankful that he said those words, because I also tied on to that and said that he'd be seeing a lot of my bills, and I was so happy to hear we're going to be working together this session. So here's number one of several that are coming forth. Members, this bill is a rather clean and simple bill that basically a couple of years ago we passed a provision for a privately owned ice skating rink or arena. The Duluth Heritage Center or Sports Center received a tax exemption on sales tax for purchase of certain supplies and materials because the facility was used pretty much exclusively for high school sports programs. And so we have another situation like this in Mound, Minnesota. Lake Minnetonka doesn't freeze over right away, and we have this skating rink out there, and it is privately owned and operated and is seeking to be included, as was the Duluth Center. And to that, I have Mr. Ingebretson here, who will add a few comments about the organization, what they do, and Mr. Ingebretson.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee, and please introduce yourself.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is, excuse me, my name is Mark Ingebretson. I'm a volunteer board member on an entity called the West Tonka Sports Association. The WSA owns the Sailor Ice Arena in Mound. With me, although they won't be talking, are another volunteer board member, Sharon Thaler, whose family was the prime driver behind the development of this arena, and Bruce Soans, who's the arena manager. We came with this request the last session. I've only been here this morning, and already I've heard this a few times. We came with this request the last session. It made it into the omnibus bill, and then that bill did not become law, so we're back. I will quickly, as I can, just provide a little bit of a context for this request. There are about 200 ice arenas in Minnesota. By far, most of them are public, owned by cities and school districts. There are a small number of private arenas that are owned by entities that qualify as 501c3 charitable organizations under the Internal Revenue Code, and who rent ice to youth, not just high school, youth and high school programs. Those, Thaler is one of those. That's what we do. We rent ice to youth programs in the Mound area and to the Mound High School hockey teams. Those ice arenas are exempt from real estate taxes because there's a provision in the real estate tax statute that says if you're a 501c3 ice arena and you rent primarily to programs for youth and high school, you're exempt from real estate taxes. There's no companion provision in the sales tax bill. In the sales tax statute, that hadn't been a problem because until 2006, if you were that kind of arena and went to the department for an exemption, you got it. In 2006, the Department of Revenue changed how it analyzed sales tax exemption. And as a result of that change, since 2006, two ICE arenas have been denied sales tax exemptions, when all the other similarly situated ice arenas received it previously, and of course all the public arenas are exempt. Those two were the Duluth Heritage Center and our Thaler Arena. In 2017, the Duluth folks came to this committee and to the legislature and said, let's have a little add-on to the sales tax statute that says you're exempt from sales tax if you're a 501c3 ice arena, if you rent primarily to youth and high school, and you are the Duluth Heritage Center. That was great for them, but it left us out. We came last year to add David M. Thaler Ice Arena to that to their amendment so that you would be exempt from sales taxes if you are a 501c3 ice arena, rent primarily to youth and high school, and are the Duluth Heritage Center or the David M. Thaler Sports Arena.
Representative Schultz, did you have a...
just want to clarify that the Duluth Center is not privately owned. It's owned by the city of Duluth, I believe.
I don't think that's correct.
Ingebrigtsen?
The Duluth Heritage Center?
Just the ice arena. The ice arena.
Well, they...
Mr. Ingebrigtsen?
We spoke with them last year when we came to the legislature, and I had a series of conversations with the president of the nonprofit corporation that owned it, but that's why they came in, because they were just like us, a 501c3 private entity.
Well, yeah, we'll figure this out. Ms. Patrick, Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, I believe that the Duluth Heritage Center was publicly owned, but I could be mistaken. My understanding is why these things are an issue is that when they are city-owned, the city gets the exemption on all the operations of the facilities. When they are operated by a nonprofit, the nonprofit does not get the exemption if the ice arena is not being used exclusively for youth programs, because then it doesn't meet the charitable nonprofit exemption. That was my understanding of the law, and that's why Duluth came in, because the nonprofit runs the facility, but the facility itself is actually owned by the city. And if the city had run it as well as owning it, they would have had the exemption.
Mr. Ingebrigtsen.
I apologize. I have focused on the that makes a lot of sense. In my discussions with the folks in Duluth, I was talking with the operator and didn't know I was talking with the operator and not the owner-operator. My apologies.
Very good. Representative Swazinski.
I'm good.
Okay. Any other questions for this testifier? Representative Hertaus, do you have another testifier?
We do not. They're not going to testify, but I wanted to thank all the folks for coming down. And if they had come yesterday to testify, they would have skated halfway here.
Yes, they would have. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to point out, when we're talking about hockey tonight, Roseville plays World.
Mr. Ingebrigtsen, thank you so much for testifying. Is there anyone in the audience who would care to testify for or against House File 43? If not, Representative Hertaus, any closing comments?
I just gave them to you.
Thank you very much. Representative, who made the Davis. Representative Davids renews the motion to lay over House File 43 for possible inclusion into the omnibus bill.
Thank you
very
Mr.
much.
Chair. Thank you, members.
And we have one final bill on the agenda, House File 279. Representative Richardson. Oh, Representative Richardson has a bag with her. If you would give those to the pages, and the tradition is you start with the senior member on the tax committee, which is Representative Carlson right there, and then it can go from there. So, Representative Richardson, thank you so much for bringing those goodies. And would anyone care to move her bill?
Oh, I will.
Representative Davids moves House File 279 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. So thank you for the goodies. And Representative Richardson, if you would begin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just add that there's donuts in that bag as well, so it's not just clementines. So
You may want to distribute those too.
Very good. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members as well. The bill before you is House File 279, and this bill is to provide an exemption for the sales and use tax for materials and supplies used in the construction of the new fire station in the city of Invergrove Heights. And I have Mayor George Torville and Fire Chief Judy Thill here to provide testimony as well on the bill.
Very good. And who wants, Mayor, going to start? So please state your name for the committee.
Thank you, Representative Richardson, and also thank you to the Tax Committee Chair and members. We were here last year, and we did get the exemption.
Mayor, if you would.
Mayor George Torville, City of Invergrove Heights.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. We were here last year. We did get the exemption. It was in the omnibus tax bill, and as we know, it did not make it, so we're back. One of the unfortunate parts is that we were committed on the property and other things, so it has, construction has started. It is not complete yet, but the chief will answer any technical questions, but in reference to, we're looking at $300,000, and it's a big deal. And we are forced to come back. I understand that through fire halls and police stations and that each one is taken as a one-off the way that it is set up. I know the court system came on some additions, and they have a bill for 4 or 5 years that any additions or remodeling or things that were done at courthouses were all included in one, but each one needs to be done on its own. So also very I am heartfelt for the fire hall. I was I'm a retired member for 26 years in the Invergrove Heights Fire Department, and we'll stand. Chief Thill will take a look at doing a brief summary here, and then we'll stand for any questions.
Very good. Thank you. Chief, please introduce yourself.
Good morning. Judy Thill, Fire Chief of the City of Invergrove Heights. Chair members, thank you for having us this morning. Just a little background on this project and our fire department and fire stations. Our city is 32 square miles with a population of 38,000. Presently, we have two fire stations serving our residents and businesses. Both fire stations are located in the upper one-third of the city. As a result, response times to the properties in the southern part of the city take at least 15 minutes, if not longer. As you can imagine, during serious medical calls, crashes, and fires, minutes count. We have mutual aid agreements with our neighboring fire departments, but their fire stations are no closer than ours. In 2010, the city hired a third party to conduct a study, which confirmed the need for the third fire station to cover the southern part of the city. The study also included recommendations for a general location of where a new station should be located. The location looked at coverage of the southern part of the city, but also considered potential for significant growth in the northwest area of Invergrove Heights. One of our current stations was built in the 1950s and had space added on to it in the 1970s. The other station was rebuilt in the 1980s. The number of calls have increased dramatically over the years. In the 70s, we responded to approximately 200 calls a year out of those same two fire stations with our 60 volunteer paid on-call firefighters. In 2018, those same two stations and 55 volunteer paid on-call firefighters, we responded to over 1,600 calls. More total calls means more calls to the southern part of the city and even more calls with longer response times. Also, as the northwest area builds out, the number of calls will continue to rise. The station we are looking to build will be 32,000 square feet, which includes a partial basement. A large portion of that basement, as well as other features designed into the fire station, would be for firefighter training. At the moment, we have to send firefighters out of the city to do much of the training because we don't have those capabilities elsewhere in our city. We're also building into the station equipment and space for decontaminating fire gear. Studies have shown that 63% of firefighters are expected to get cancer compared to 41% of the general population. This includes both volunteer and career firefighters. Because cardiac issues are the biggest killer of firefighters nationwide, we've also planned for a workout room to be available for firefighters to use. Our police officers have also been invited to join us in that workout area. The cost of the construction of the building presently is $8,667,558, and the cost of utilities, water, sewer, and fiber that had to be run to this particular property is expected to be approximately $552,000. At this time, I'll answer any questions you may have. Thank you.
Chief, thank you so much. Representative Swedzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. Just a question on a project that's already started and kind of how this would this have to be a retroactive when it comes to sales tax, or how would that kind of address it maybe to Mrs. Dalton there?
Thank you. Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, Representative Swedzinski, the way this bill is written, I mean, they've already let their contracts, and so their contracts already have built into them the cost of the materials, including the sales tax. So what this bill does is it says the contractors and subcontractors submit that information to the city, and then the city is going to apply for the refund and get the refund. And that ensures that the ultimate beneficiaries are the city and the city taxpayers.
Ms. Dalton, last year and the last couple of years, I remember school districts coming in with kind of the same concern, you know, on these bids, if they purchase the materials, having to do with liability, but then they'd have to pay the sales tax. What is that issue exactly? And I think this is the kind of the same issue we have here.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the issue relates to the fact that the local government sales tax exemption that was passed a couple of years ago went back to the law that existed in the 1980s. And basically what it says is their direct, the local government's direct purchases are exempt. So if they are doing construction and they set up their construction contract so they have a materials-only construction contract and a labor-only construction contract that are not tied to each other, they can purchase their materials tax-exempt because the local government is doing the direct mm-hmm. purchase. However, that also means that the local government has to take responsibility for any material defects. So what that means is if something happens to construction after the fact, then you have to face the litigation of who's responsible. Was it a material defect? Was it a labor? Was it a construction flaw? And so that's a lot of liability issues that local governments tend not to want to do. So they tend to do turnkey projects. And because of this turnkey construction contract, the actual materials are purchased by the contractors. They are responsible for the materials, but because they're doing the direct purchase, they don't get the exemption.
Thank you. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Maybe Ms. Dalton, are we seeing questions here? I don't recall. Have we done this before where something has, a project has started and we go back and attempt it?
Ms. Dalton.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, yes, we do. There was one in the 2017 bill for the city of Plymouth. It's the one I can think of most recently.
Any other questions for testifiers? Representative Richardson, do you have any other testifiers?
No, and those are the only testifiers I have, but I want to thank you for coming down today.
Okay, I'm going to ask then, is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against House File 279? Seeing none, Representative Richardson, would you care to have your closing statements? Oh, do we have questions? Closing statements.
I would just like to ask for support for inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you very much. Representative Davids renews his a motion to lay over House File 279 for possible inclusion into the omnibus tax bill. Testifiers, Mayor, Chief, thank you so much. And Representative Richardson, thank you.
Thank you.
Good job. Members, we will hear more bills tomorrow. And on Thursday, we're going to have a general discussion on tax expenditures and then also look at the OLA report on the research and development tax credit. So anything else for the good of the order? If not, members, survive the cold. We are adjourned.